Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Media Answers Network, and is sponsored by the law offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Steve Rettling, Chief Technology and Innovation Officer at HIMSS. Welcome, Steve.
Oh, thank you very much, Matt.
So, Steve, what I always like to do before diving into the heart of the conversation is to let my guests give a little bit of more of a background in terms of who they are and what they do. So the floor is all yours.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Matt. I'm the Chief Technology and Innovation Officer for HIMSS, and I am focused on helping to elevate and amplify healthcare information and technology and accelerate innovation in that space, whether it's through thought leadership, sharing insights, helping to connect the dots for those that are looking for those answers. And then I also operate and oversee health innovation for HIMSS, which includes Health 2.0, Personal Connected Health Alliance. And overall, I get to also work as well with a number of leaders in policy across governments within the U.S. government, as well as internationally and a few other organizations like the WHO.
And I think this will probably help lead us into the main part of our conversation. But kind of what first brought you into the technology and innovation space within healthcare?
Yeah. So, I was really brought into it just ahead of former manager reached out to me and asked me while I was working in telecom if I'd be interested in healthcare. And I, at the time, was kind of intrigued by it, but I said, I'm not sure, right? I'm kind of used to, quote unquote, launching rockets over here compared to what's going on in healthcare. And that person said, I you're right. And I think that's exactly why we need you to get into healthcare, because we need you to help lead the revolution on using information and technology to provide, a better care and better outcomes. And so after that conversation, I was hooked, because I realized I could have a little bit of a greater purpose in what I do every day. And I guess the rest you'd call history.
Yeah, no, that's very intriguing, because it's a very common answer that I hear from people who have come from other industries and ended up with a focus on healthcare, which is, as you said, it really gives the opportunity to feel like you're having a broader, more kind of public good purpose.
Absolutely. There's just as much work. You get to interact with amazing people all day. And when you've had that brain damage of the day or the challenges, you get to go home and still think about probably a number of people, could be in the hundreds of thousands, just depending on where you're working, that you've impacted in a really amazing way, at least being a part of that process, that care delivery process, as a information and technology professional.
So I'm very interested to hear, as you said, and I'm not going to ask you when this occurred, you're saying that you're kind of lured into healthcare with the promise of, I think you said, helping to lead the revolution with information technology. And arguably, it kind of feels like we've been in that waiting for the revolution stage for a long period of time. So, I'd kind of like to talk about, I guess, like three periods of time with you today, the pre-COVID pandemic period, the time period during the pandemic, and then, to the extent we can, be able to predict what it'll look like afterwards. I know, when the pandemic really started, a lot of people were gearing up for the 2020 HIMSS annual meeting, and I think a lot of discussion was starting to get spurred around that. So kind of what would you say was the lay of the health information technology landscape right before the pandemic started?
Yeah, I mean, I think, just a little broader context, right? Probably the last 10 years in the broad landscape across the U.S. and internationally, in a lot of cases, were spent actually digitizing the patient record. So getting access in a systematic way, after digitizing that, to the patient's record to be able to do analysis and further decision support. So, there were organizations that did that early on when I was at Kaiser, when I first started at Kaiser in 2004, Kaiser Permanente. I was a part of helping to deploy that initial deployment of Epic. And so it's been a journey for many. And so I think that as we were walking into right before this pandemic occurred, a significant amount of focus on the use of information, the ability to focus more on, in healthcare, on organizations, what they do well versus what typically they've had to run on their own from an infrastructure side. So starting to move to the cloud for key capabilities, in some cases in a wholesale way, in other cases a hybrid, in some cases many starting to look at it. We're starting to see buzzwords that were part of the hype cycle move, you know, into specific solutions versus kind of broad hyperbole. And so, you know, things like parts of AI starting to be built into some of the vendor EHRs, interoperability, APIs being exposed primarily through the FHIR standard with HL7, starting to get some adoption along with key use cases from profiling organizations, really a deployment of, you know, specialty tool sets around caring for chronically ill patients that included combinations of home visits for with telehealth and analytics, and the start of deployment of personal medical devices for those that need a little bit more data about their health, and or care providers that need to look in and care for those that are in that those situations where they need a little bit more care and a little bit more urgency in getting receiving that care. And I think, you know, that it has been a time where there was beginning to be a tipping point of technology, there being a lot of technology that really needed to be or was starting to be applied versus being kind of in that early part of the innovation cycle. We could see that with companies like Livongo and others that started to come out with really toolkits and resources and capabilities to deploy solutions as a tech-enabled service to support very specific populations of patients, and the beginning of the emergence of taking that convergence of technology and starting to apply it to make a difference in care outcomes with those digital health tools combined with the care providers.
So is it kind of fair to say, you know, to maybe try and tease out a fine point there, you know, it sounds like, you know, we started with technology is going to solve every problem to refining it down and finding specific scenarios and specific use cases where, you know, if you did a more targeted intervention with the technology, then you could actually see a clearer path to implementation and effective use.
Yeah, I think that's right. It was beginning to understand specific applications of technology in the care process that had a significant benefit or, you know, outweighed kind of the older models. And so emergence of applying that technology in newer care models, for sure. And I think that's the challenge of these technologies as they come out in a hype cycle is sometimes it's a hammer and how can you apply that hammer? And I think the more that's known about and the more accessible the information is, the easier it is to start to understand how to apply it to specific use cases that have value to the patient, and as well as can reduce, you know, reduce that cost as well, to help balance that out.
And, you know, to get to that point, you know, I guess, did you see hesitancy in adoption even for the specific use cases? You know, because I feel like one of the arguments against the implementation would be, depending on what area you're dealing with in healthcare, you know, you've got a much more direct impact on, you know, potentially life or death decisions or, you know, long-term well-being of someone. Whereas, right, you know, say, if your iPod didn't work with the first generation, while you might be frustrated, ultimately the only thing that was harmed was, you know, your momentary happiness.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, what we have seen over the last few years are drivers that have created pilots and bite-size trials of using technology to aid in providing better care, because you can't always be with the patient, and at the same time, growing awareness of from a consumer side of just the use of technology, and so those allowed, you know, for the creation of, you know, the measurement of the applied use of the technology with the models. And I think, you know, now we before COVID didn't have the same urgency of really restricted access, but also the payment models for the biggest like payer in the US, as an example, didn't really support telehealth for, you know, CMS or other, you know, government funded situations. They were all very specialty, unique situations where you could apply technology either in risk arrangements with specific payers or, pilots that like the renal ACO, ESRD, or other special needs plans where you could bake those benefits in and still get reimbursed by the government. But those are all kind of bite-sized and very focused on purpose-driven care processes and care delivery areas. And you know, COVID basically, because of the physical limiter with, you know, CMS changed that rule and has really now opened it wide open around video and, you know, other telemedicine and you know, remote scenarios that include obviously accessing the data, analyzing that data, but also using devices to collect that data and then interact remotely. And so it's, you know, now kind of changed the dynamic and whether it was okay or not, I think that the data basically leading up to it said, this can be very effective. Obviously if you deploy the technology and the care process the right way, but it certainly rose to the occasion or the tipping point with COVID.
Yeah, and I think that transition that you just referenced is a really important one, you know, that pre-COVID reimbursement or just any type of payment other than in specific risk-based models was not that great for telehealth. But then, you know, as you were just saying, during the pandemic with all the different emergency orders, certainly from CMS on for Medicare and pushing into a bunch of Medicaid plans where states have sought waivers, mm-hmm. You've also seen states trying to encourage commercial to reimburse it. You know, it really kind of seems to go to services will follow where the money is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. I also do think that there is a certain element of awareness that has to be a part of the services as well. And I think we are now starting to see digital natives emerge as well as, you know, we've had now, I think mobile technology has brought consumer technology to the forefront. And that's frankly, that was since the iPhone was launched, I think, at the end of 2007, but now it's part of everyone's daily life. And you see folks that are, you know, maybe used to be technology averse, and is tied to, not necessarily, but it's tied to, you know, age usually, but getting used to that because they're used to wanting to interact with their family and use the technology to keep those relationships and connections going. And so I think it's the combination because if it's the reimbursement is definitely key in behavior of how you provide the care models, but whether the care model is used or not is highly dependent on whether, you know, the consumer, the patient's going to adapt to it. And I think it's actually those two elements together that we have kind of this nice convergence around it, that the timing's right. Certainly reimbursement aligning incentives is going to help, but also patients are able to consume and adapt to the model as well.
So to that point, you know, what data points do you expect will be generated and then kind of advanced as we continue to progress through the pandemic time period?
I mean, there are quite a number of data points. I think, I guess I'd step back and say overall, I think another awareness that has come about from the pandemic is that, you know, the medical community, the physicians, the nurses, those involved in the process are also consumers. And I've had that perspective before, but I think it's even more ever present now as we see the need to innovate and how important it is for them to have what they need to be able to provide care in really, you know, limiting situations. So I think there's data points that are needed around the entire care delivery process. And it's definitely patient focused, but also how does it impact those that are providing care in that process as well. And so I'd say those are kind of those are two key big buckets, definitely for sure, around, you know, big data points that need to be collected. I think the other part is these are new for a lot of systems or providers. This is a new model. So how effective are they at meeting their standard measures around, you know, what their protocols that they have as providers or health systems to meet the quality, to engage with the patients, to continue, I'd hope, if they're not already, measuring patient satisfaction, but also on the other side of it, thinking about provider satisfaction and welfare. And then, you know, what's interesting is there is this, I think that I was recently, I'm on the Colorado Innovation Response Team for COVID-19 here. And one of the conversations was looking at, you know, can some of the reimbursement rate that was there before for providers, where is it at today compared to where it has been, right, when we had kind of this lack of a physical barrier, I guess, in front of us. And it's not quite there, right? So I think it's anywhere a range of 50% to, in some cases, 80% of what they were seeing before, especially for these patients that are government-funded patients. And yet what's interesting is, you know, what is the difference in expenses or effort or the amount of time that you can actually spend per patient? Is it better? Is there more efficiency? Is it easier for the physicians? Is it easier because of the technology? Do they have more access to data that they need to manage someone that's chronically ill because they've been able to deploy some diagnostics and remote monitoring in lieu of you know, getting hands-on or just being safer that they don't have the hands-on at times? Those are all kind of key factors to understand how effective this is, and is it a different model or is it better, and in what ways would it be better? And so, you know, I think there's still a lot to learn, but I think the good news is that the unknown reasons, you know, those barriers that have kept this happening at a larger scale had now been lowered to allow that learning and that information to be collected. And there's a lot, you know, there's a lot to learn from it. And I think that those small bite-sized projects and pilots that have been going on before can help inform. And it's an opportunity to look at best practice of things that have worked for others to apply maybe more at scale, and look at how do you tune the model overall, not using, you know, not having to use physical in-person visits always as the common denominator.
And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Steve Rettling from HIMSS, and we've been talking about, you know, health information technology leading up to the COVID pandemic and now the utilization during the course of the pandemic. And Steve, I think what you were just talking about, you know, in terms of being able to kind of develop and figure out best practices, it's, you know, this forced utilization to a large degree of technology-based solutions has been basically, at least from my perspective, like a real world experiment. And, you know, it sounds like presents the opportunity to move from the theoretical to the practical and come out of this with the groundwork for how do you mesh the virtual, you know, call it the virtual care world and the physical care world.
No, it's these, you know, the out of these pressure situations come some great opportunities. And, you know, I think that is the opportunity that many providers and the health systems and patients are finding themselves in, trying to navigate, you know, access to care, as well as the fear that they're facing, the kind of the unknowingness. And, you know, there's that access to the information, whether it's in person or remote, being able to trust that information, be able to make decisions off of that information, whether, you know, it's you as an individual and or in tandem with your is really, you know, rising to the top. And it's really kind of always been that, the access to the care and then the information. And then what do you do to make decisions about that information? And you know, this ability to add a layer, to do it remotely and in ways that aren't physical, provides a real unique opportunity on how to transform the experience of care and the quality of care, and also the cost of care.
Have you been able to see any trends or, you know, unexpected results starting to develop already?
Well, I think there's a couple things that, you know, a couple things that are emerging. There have been a number of health systems that have shifted and transformed or adopted a care model that embraces caring for those that need more attention, that fall in the kind of chronically ill category, and or those that are at risk or may be getting, you know, have COVID but are not sure, may need to know guidance whether to go into the hospital or they're doing okay at home. And those changes include, you know, deploying teletechnology, whether it's video remote monitoring, diagnostics, things as simple as a thermometer for those that might have COVID, and some monitoring capabilities, as well as other diagnostic type of capabilities that have been innovated through some EHR companies in tandem with providers, and some new entrants that are coming to the market that have kind of repackaged their tools into, you know, COVID-specific monitoring tools. So we're starting to see, you know, some immediate changes from that perspective. On the other side of it, this call for an access to data has also risen to the top, and what people traditionally call interoperability, but it's just, you know, essentially how do you get access to the patient's data if you now have them in your facility, or if a provider now has them in front of them. It's really, you know, been critical. It's you know, these transfers from either up in Colorado here from the mountains down into the city, because there's only so many ICU beds up, you know, in the mountains. It's so critical for them to have the background, the notes, the information, and, you know, and if they can have that, it saves the time, the accuracy. And then, of course, if not, they've got to go back to traditional methods, hopefully not fax, but hopefully, you know, maybe having to, you know, maybe making a phone call, trying to get the other provider on the phone. And that slows down time. Sometimes you can't actually get that connection. So that's also risen that to the top. I think the other thing that, you know, the other thing that has risen up as a need, but I haven't seen any specifically improvement in it yet, is the supply, you know, the logistical support, which a lot of it is around the whole supply chain management that, you know, I think is now getting a lot of attention and sometimes is neglected, but is so critical in, you know, providing the underlying care and support around that. So, you know, I think we are seeing some real-time improvement. We're seeing deployment of capabilities, and we'll have to see what comes out of that further, you know, from a metrics and measurements perspective, but I'm sure that data will be coming out hopefully in the next few months.
Yeah, and I guess starting to think to the long term and to a transition to what will most likely be a very different system once we start to kind of reopen, I guess, society here and really just everything after COVID, what do you kind of envision the healthcare system is going to look like?
Well, I think that the systems that have done the best, at least that I've heard of and seen, have a little bit more of a platform approach with their information and technology systems that is driven by, you know, agility, but also standards, allowing them to integrate and change the systems quickly, which has been important. Important during this time with COVID. And I think that usually emerges around kind of business models and trends and market drivers and competition. In this case, you know, COVID was just another pressure that kind of drove that, and also elevated those that could respond more quickly in that regard. And so I think we're going to see really this need and desire to move to much more of a platform approach, to be able to adapt no matter whether it's this, you know, whether it's COVID, if it's COVID-19 as a resurgence, COVID-20, whatever that next pressure or issue is, I think, you know, that's going to be paramount. I think when you think about the deployment of the technology, certainly, and I've said this before COVID, I think we're going to see over the next few years, and maybe when we say it now, maybe even within a year, maybe half of all visits will be telehealth. And that's driven by, I think, consumer awareness and the fact that everyone now knows, as part of the cycle of care, that it's possible. You can get good advice. You can get good care without having to be seen. Of course, there's a lot of scenarios where a physician needs to see someone and have their hands on the patient. But in the meantime, it's a consumer convenience now just to get that access for a lot of different reasons and needs. I think the other thing that's going to be very much important is, If you don't, as a health system or provider, you don't have an EHR that allows you to configure and insert clinical decision support into your care processes, that is going to change and be paramount. And this rapid set of information that was changing coming out of COVID really kind of emphasized that it's so important to have decision support within electronic health record and the decision-making process, but also to, you know, agilely update that and you know, integrate that from a protocol perspective. And then the thing I'll just end on there is that it's so critical to have an agile analytics capability to understand and synthesize real time what's happening in the field and what's going on with your patients, and what is that data telling you, understanding supplies, resourcing, and even hot spots within, you know, those you're caring for, be able to kind of manage that and make decisions rapidly.
So kind of with the expectation there of, you know, the continued change, what sort of support do you see organizations, both large and small, needing to be able to continue in that direction? And kind of what I'm thinking of is the fact that it seems like a lot of vendors are offering, you know, free or reduced price access to solutions, yeah, which, you know, obviously helps speed adoption right now. But then the question is, what happens when, you know, fees do start need to be to start getting paid?
You know, I would say it's just like anything else. You do what you need to do now to take care of the urgent and the needful for your patients and for your staff to deliver the care that, you know, that in the best way you can. At the same time, it's time to step back and say what worked, what didn't work. What is the blueprint in the future of the information we need and the technology and what that approach is, so that we can make adjustments, make investments around the experience and the capability that we're providing. And I think it's not just about, it's certainly not just about the information technology. It's stepping back and saying, what is this care model? What is the experience? Is it okay that we just have a couple different sets of tools and we ask the patient to navigate them? Or do we want to try to simplify that and make it easy to engage? Does it need to be seem like it, all those tools are coming from us? Or can it be an ecosystem of tools we provide to the patient that just helps them get what they need? And I think those are the questions that as a business and as a, you know, care organization that everyone should be asking themselves is, how do they want to show up? What is important for them to provide what that model of care is or those models of care are? And then, is there a pathway? Maybe you can't get there tomorrow or the day after that, but can you translate that and get there over time so that as things do shift and change, that your blueprint can adjust and that you now have a much more flexible and adaptable model to provide the experience and the care, you know, now and into the future.
Yeah, no, and I think there's going to be a lot to watch and a lot to track. But believe it or not, we're already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Steve Rutling, for a great conversation today.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at #HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.